Last week, I received the following email to say my name is Neil Fox. I am a road safety advocate with particular focus on vulnerable road users, especially cyclists. I have and continue to be involved in many campaigns and initiatives on road safety, and I'm a judge on the Road Safety Authority's Leading Lights Awards panel. While involved with many stakeholders and groups, I am independent of them all and act on my own behalf in memory of my sister, and most importantly, to promote safety for the living. Well, Neil Fox, road safety advocate, joins us now on the line. Good morning, Neil.
Good morning, Owen. How are you? Thanks for having me on.
Thanks for joining us. Before we talk about your campaign at the moment and what you're advocating for, you might expand on the latter part there of that introduction in relation to your sister, and you're working to kind of extend her memory. What happened?
Donna Fox is my sister, and I suppose it's just under, I think it's 6.5 years now, in Dublin, she was killed cycling to work. Donna was 30 years old at the time, and she used to drive part of the way. We're originally from North County Dublin near Donal, so she'd drive most of the way into work, and then she'd cycle the last couple of miles, I suppose, a little bit more than that maybe. So she was used to doing it, and she was very unfortunate in that she kind of was doing all the so-called right things, but tragedy struck regardless. She was cycling in a cycle lane. She was at a junction when she was hit by a delivery lorry. So she, in a way, it's a small grace in one sense, but she died on impact. Pretty much, she died at the scene. So I suppose for us, we feel that at least she didn't really know any physical pain, really. It was so instant, which is a hard thing to say in one way. But in another, I think people might understand that sometimes it's very difficult regardless of the situation, I suppose. But so I suppose the shock of that, it's difficult, I suppose, a few years on, because although sometimes I feel we're not doing the best at times, but at the same time does really help. And I suppose you do sort of, we all find our own way of dealing with things. But at the same time, back then, it's such a raw, it's such a horrendous, any death is tragic of somebody young or of any age, really, when you're close to them. But I think with a road death, it's especially difficult because it just seems so senseless, and it's very difficult to get your head around it. And there can be lots of other, there can be lots of commentary about it as well, and all that, and there can be I think sometimes when people die on the roads, a lot of the time there's huge leniency given to the person who remains alive, in the sense of if there's another driver involved, but the person who's died is sort of seems, oh, these things are inevitable, or why weren't they doing this, that, or the other, or were they speeding, or were they this, or and I think that's something people don't really talk about, but there can be a lot of so-called victim blaming as well.
Right.
Now, I'm not saying that was universal, but like you do experience it, and sometimes it's in a very small way. It's in people that don't even, it can be people even related to you. They like what would have been said when Donna died by some people was, oh, but why was she cycling? She got to take your life into your own hands. That type of thing, which is quite, to me, that's quite bonkers, because it's a very defeatist attitude as well. Now, thankfully, that's the minority, but it's just important to say that, because I think sometimes we automatically assume that when somebody is killed on the roads that, where they are at fault, and I think the first thing should be to think, what can we do to prevent this happening again, and I should say my sister wasn't at fault, but that's neither here nor there, and I think that the positive that you can, you try to bring some positive to it, so.
And at the time, Neil, would you have been kind of road safety advocates at that time, or is it only really now after what happened to Donna that you've decided to really take and run with this?
Oh, yes, absolutely. It was after her death, and it was quite, to be honest, it was accidental. I just got asked to do a couple of things, and it sort of went from there. And also, it was definitely a way for me to kind of channel my energy on grief. And I suppose it can sometimes sound very negative, that you're kind of banging on about road safety and, fatalities and how to reduce them, or how to, prevent things. But it's actually something that's, it's quite positive, because you do see changes. Since Donna's death, there has been changes, where the site where she diet is altered, and hopefully it's safer as a result. But also, like, things like the cycling legislation has finally come in recent years, and I'll probably talk about that in a little bit. But other things as well, there definitely is much more improvement in infrastructure. Now, I'm saying all this, there's lots to be done as well, but there are positives. And, like, on just on one really positive note is that, when I speak to people, I always have to check the Garda stats, because they can change. You know, unfortunately, people can... road incidents happen so regularly, but we still have had no there's no pedal cyclist was killed this year in Ireland, in the Republic anyway, so that's pretty positive to go with. Like, not that we want anyone, you know, but at the same time it is, so you know, you have to be balanced as well. Like, there are improvements, but to keep it that way, like, the problem is that we can get very complacent and we can think that, oh, because our numbers aren't as high as they used to be, injuries is a big thing. Sorry, I should say that as well. Like, most of the crashes on the road lead to serious injuries, and, you know, all types of injuries, where we obviously are much more likely to hear about fatalities, and especially some kind of garner more attention than others. But there's people injured every day on the roads, especially cyclists, and we need to do what we can to curb that.
Okay, tell us about this new campaign that you've set up, Neil. You met with Assistant Garda Commissioner Paula Hillman, and you're kind of trying to get on Garda Síochána to come on board and set up a new liaison officer, is it?
Yeah, basically, I'm calling it a loose sort of term, but I think it's probably the easiest kind of layman's term to say, but like a cycling liaison office or officer within on Garda Síochána. So it wouldn't be an outside, it wouldn't be an activist coming in. It would be somebody within the guards who already, preferably would be somebody already working in the police and the roads policing end. But it could be somebody else, perhaps, that has much more sort of interest and experience in cycling that might want to get involved either. But that's up to the Gardaí at the end of the day. But I suppose my sort of idea was, it came about because of the amount of sort of, I suppose, complaints from different parts of Ireland. And, you know, it is in a kind of a national campaign and it will be a national body, please God, when it's set up. But the idea has been that there has been so many different kind of experiences with Gardaí around the country in terms of people reporting various offences or we'll say incidents between motorists and cyclists. And, you know, like the more obvious one that I've spoke about before is, the reporting of the new law, the dangerous overtaking of a cyclist, and, you know, to make it easier, as in to be able for a cyclist to be simply able to submit online footage, if they have camera footage of an incident that they feel should require some sort of prosecution or else penalties, fines and the rest of it. At the moment, the positive news on that is that the assistant commissioner, Paula Hillman, has said that she's very supportive of them, and they see that coming in next year. Obviously it would be better to come in sooner because we've had about 5 years since the new law, the legislation came in. But it will take a bit of time to dole out and that. And this that alone kind of goes into the idea of having a cycling liaison officer. Their job then would be to ensure that all around the country, all the guards are aware of the exact nature of that law and how to implement it, or how to enforce it and how to take, complaints. You see, the thing has been that some guards have been fobbing people off with complaints, and that's I've heard it a lot. So I would believe it's true. Like, it seems to be a common theme, and I would say on a human level that I can understand to a degree in relation to the legislation, because it can seem very, you know, because a dangerous manoeuvre doesn't necessarily require the vehicle to have hit the bike or the person, and there doesn't have to be a physical injury for it to be seen as an offence.
Yeah.
And, you know, so on a practical level, the guard might think, oh, but you're okay, at least you weren't hurt or anything like that. And look, there's lots of paperwork and stuff involved. So, you know, but it's to try and stop that.
Yeah.
It's not an anti-guard thing at all. And it's also as well to just improve the relations between the guard of Síochána and cyclists. Now, that can, like, some people, that's perception a lot of the time. Most guards are very good and that. And, you know, I've worked with the AGSI, I've had meetings with them as well, and I've had huge support on engaging conversations with them.
Okay, and on that note, Neil, I mean, the ultimate goal here is to try and make our roads as safe as possible, and that's what your campaign is advocating for. The onus is on drivers and those who are, you know, behind the wheel at, you know, a certain vehicle or whatever, but also there is a particular onus on cyclists as well, and I'm sure you could appreciate that, to ensure that they're, you know, well lit up, that they're wearing high-vis jackets, that they have lights on their bikes, that they're adhering to traffic lights, that maybe they're not cycling four, five, six abreast or whatever that might be construed as being unsafe. So it's about working together.
Yeah, that's partly why I think it's a really positive move on both sides, because it, like, the better relations between, like, if cyclists feel that the guards have their back, they're much more likely to do things that they might feel is a bit of an inconvenience, you know, to improve their own behaviour on the roads, like, and you know, so it's a win-win. And just to say, sorry, just the cycling engagement group part is basically just a couple of meetings at maximum with the assistant commissioner and a couple of other members of An Garda Síochána and myself. And that's just really to trash out maybe different ideas or maybe problems that they've encountered, and what can we do and what would they like the cycling liaison office or officers to be involved in, or what would their ideas be. Doesn't mean they'll all be taken on board, obviously, but it's to trash it out together. And so I suppose that's why I'm appealing to people that might not normally get involved in these things, you know, rather than activists or you know, advocates like myself, but maybe just the average day-to-day commuter like my sister was, that might want to, like, say about their experiences and what they think the guards could do to improve things. So if they want to get involved, just to email me at neilfoxcork@gmail.com. So that's neilfoxcork@gmail.com. I was living in Cork, and not now, but it's just an easy address to give out. And then we'll get back to you, because the deadline is March 31st, and we'll organise a meeting in the next month or so, please God.
Okay, that email address is neilfoxcork@gmail.com, and it's a new campaign that is being launched by Neil Fox. He's met with Assistant Garda Commissioner Paula Hillman with a view to making roads safer for cyclists. And if you want to get involved there and have your say, send an email off to Neil, and we'll see what comes out of it. We'll keep in touch with you, Neil, and thanks indeed for joining us on the show this morning. That is Neil Fox, a road safety advocate who lost his sister, Donna Fox. Younger sister, she was knocked off her bike by a delivery lorry as she cycled to work in Dublin on the 16th of September 2016. She died on impact at the scene, and she was 30 years old. So, as I mentioned, it is all about making road safer, about getting those who are driving vehicles to work in tandem with those who are on bikes. And as Neil said, looking at the first 3 months of this year, there hasn't yet been a fatality, touch wood, from somebody cycling a pedal bike this year, which is positive news there. And hopefully we can keep going in that direction. Neil Fox, thanks for your time. When we come back, we'll be speaking to a man from Dunlavin hitchhiking to Australia in aid of suicide prevention charities. He's already in Kazakhstan, and we've local issues in Naas and Ballymore Eustace.
Kildare Today with Owen Beattie.
With Whitewater Shopping Centre Newbridge, Ireland's largest regional shopping centre. Fashion, food, film, all under one roof in the heart of Newbridge. WhitewaterSC.ie. Kildare
FM. Okay, just getting to some of the messages that are coming in to us. Val Ryan in Salins says, wholeheartedly agree with everything Neil is trying to achieve in regards to road safety. As a victim left with life-changing injuries where both motorists invoked, pleaded guilty, but both walked away, one on appeal and one on a legal loophole. So I believe we really need to look at legislation as well, says Val Ryan. Chris in Selbridge is on of the view that cyclists are breaking red lights. He's witnessed that, and they don't have red lights on their bikes. Also, Joe in Kildangan says the same thing, that cyclists should be wearing lights, electric scooters as well, wearing high-vis jackets. Mick in Mead says, just listening to your speaker on road safety, people on push bikes, I'm sure you've come across people riding three or four abreast. I came across a group on Saturday morning riding three abreast with earphones on. I beat beep the horn. They refused to pull in. I eventually got past them. I was coming out of my local shop and they were coming in. I asked them if they knew the traffic law rules of the road. And, well, Mick, you say you were told where to go and that it was a pure waste of your time. As I said, though, and Neil agrees with that, is, okay, if we're trying to reduce the number of incidents on our roads and the number of incidents that are occurring between pedestrians and vehicles and cyclists and vehicles, everybody has to work together. Everybody, so it's, we can't really say, well, it's this person's fault or that person's fault, or I'm not going to change my ways until they change their ways. Everybody has to work together and row in together, and that's generally how things work and how things get done. But keep those messages coming in anyway. 0833 97 97 97. Andy Howard is on the line. He's a man originally from Dunlavin, but he's on the way to Australia hitchhiking in aid of suicide prevention charities to show that even when the odds are against you, you can find a way. And he's joining us today from Kazakhstan. He's made it that far. Andy, good morning, as it is here in Kildare and West Wicklow, and good evening, as it is with you in Kazakhstan. How are you?
Yeah, so I lost a mate of mine through suicide in 2018. And I recently moved over to the UK for a bit of a fresh start for myself. And got to the stage, set myself up really well. And I kind of said to myself, before I settle, I want to do something big and I'd love to be able to help out as many people as possible. So, yeah, I decided to try to challenge myself then to trek from the UK then to Australia, starting with zero money and just count on the kindness of strangers then for food, shelter and travel. Again, all to raise awareness of funds for suicide prevention.
Right, so you started off then planning it last year. The actual journey began on the 14th of January, which is just over two months ago now, 2.5 months. Tell us where you went and how it all started off when you left the UK. Where did you go to first?
Yeah, so I started off not really knowing. I kind of had a rough idea of where, like, what route to kind of take. And tried to go to France first. And a guy reached out to me on Instagram saying that he'd love to help you. Paddy is his name. So he reached out through Instagram and just said, look, I'd love to be able to help you out. And he then paid for my ferry then to get across over to France. And on the ferry boat then, just started talking to a guy who said that he'd love to be able to help me out also. And he brought me to the train station and paid then for my train to get into Paris. And it's just been happening like that, where just loads of people are kind of just constantly helping out. I kind of wanted to show people then that there is a lot of help in the world if you actually go look for it. So it's been really nice. Went through Paris and then through Switzerland, Italy, Greece, Turkey, and then across Turkey, Georgia, and then into Kazakhstan.
Right, and that's where you're talking to us from today, from Kazakhstan. Did it get harder as you went kind of further east in Europe, and maybe the language barrier then was an issue?
So, sorry about that.
Yeah, when you were leaving the area in the UK and France, you know, did language become an issue then when you went further east? Okay, we might have just lost Andy there again. That line is not fantastic there. Can you...
I lost the mate of mine through suicide in South.
Okay, we might have to try get Andy back again, or maybe we'll let it go if the line is not great there over in Kazakhstan. But just to give you a bit of an idea of what he's doing, he's hitchhiking through these various different countries to try and make it as far as Australia. And he's done exceptionally well so far. If you want to follow out his journey on Facebook, you can find him on Facebook under Andy Howard. He hopes to raise over €100,000, which will be divided between Samaritans Ireland, Samaritans UK and Beyond Blue in Australia. He went to Paris first, but as he mentioned, he's made it through a number of different countries and he's now in Kazakhstan. His plan is to go from Kazakhstan into India next, which is his next port of call, and originally from Dunlavin but based over in the UK now. We might try one more time with you, Andy, just to get the latest from you. So you're in Kazakhstan and you're planning and go to India next, is that right?
Yeah, so I'm trying to figure out how I'm going to try to get into India. So again, part of this project and whole challenge is to try get through to the kindness of strangers. So not only that, I have to kind of pick out the safest route possible then as well. And then I'm doing a document on everything on YouTube. So the YouTube series is the Great Night Project. And then I'm trying to update everybody then on social media. Then like say Instagram. So my Instagram account is at AndyHoward213. But yeah, it's just to try to figure out what the safest way of going. So I could go through China and then try to get over to Himalaya somehow, or go through the rest of the stands like Uzbekistan, and Afghanistan, Pakistan, and try to get into India. So yeah, trying to pick out at the moment there what the safest route going is.
Okay, when you get to Australia then, what's the plan, Andy? And also in terms of the monies raised, how are you raising money?
Yeah, so I've no real plan to get to Australia again. No plan once I get there. The idea is to try to get by each day and kind of break it down into smaller steps, because I don't know where my next meal is going to come from. I don't know where I'm going to rest my head at night or what the plan is then for the next week or so. So, yeah, just try to take it step by step. And then I'm trying to raise £100,000 then for 3 charities. And that's all on the GoFundMe then as well. So if anyone wants to check that out, that's on GoFundMe, and I'm Seeking Humankind.
Okay, good stuff. Well, listen, we'll keep an eye on your journey and progress on your Facebook page and on your YouTube as well. But for the moment, thanks for joining us and stay safe. That's Andy Howard, originally from Dunlavin, hitchhiking over to Australia in aid of suicide prevention charities. It's good talking to you, Andy, and thanks indeed for joining us. Another message that has come into us. Aaron in Nace says, I totally agree with Neil on the road safety issues facing cyclists and walkers, etc. Well done to him for trying to get the Gardaí on board. Cycling is only going to get more popular. If you see a group of cyclists, you can be pretty sure that they know their rights on the road cycling better than the driver does. Cycling formations are used to protect themselves. Simple as that. P.S. Get over the high-vis thing. Drivers should expect vulnerable road users to be out and about, says Aaron in Nace. I would agree on the sentiment, but I do think that people, if you're on a bike or you're out walking, particularly on unlit areas, you should wear a high-vis jacket. That's what they're there for. So I would be advocating for wearing a high-vis jacket for your own safety on a bike or when you're out walking, but also to alert those drivers who maybe are driving on country roads. Let's go to the Nace Municipal District, and the Mayor of Nace, Fine Gael Councillor Evie Salmon, is with us now. Good morning, Evie.
Good morning, Owen. Good morning to your listeners.
Some of the local issues, Evie, that you've been raising with Kildare County Council recently. And firstly, you wanted them to explore providing more car parking spaces in Millbrook Court in Nace, because you say vehicles are parking on the green areas due to the lack of parking spaces that are available.
Yeah, so look, there's double yellow lines outside the front of Millbrook Court, and so it's probably caused more cars to go in to the car park at the side. There's some vehicles parking up on the green area, which is understandable. They've nowhere else to park, and that's their home. So I just asked them to explore what the options were. So the council have said it's possible to provide about 4 more parking spaces, but it would involve taking away some of the green area and removing 3 of the trees. And the cost is around €15,000. Look, I don't want to advocate taking away green areas or trees, but if it can't be used because cars are tearing it up and parking on it, we need to get practical about providing car parking spaces. It's something that I'm raising all of the time, in particularly planning applications for apartments, where now applicants are coming in with only maybe 1 car parking space, or the craziness of 1/2 a car parking space per apartment in a block. And the reality is, especially in Nace, you have a lot of people who are commuting into Dublin, who are maybe driving back down the country at the weekend in apartments, and they're renting. And the idea that there's only 1 car per 2 or 3 bed apartment is just ludicrous. So, look, it's happening in Millbrook Court at the moment. There are other apartment blocks and estates in Nace that it's happening as well. The council said that due to limited resources, it's not possible to facilitate the request at this time. So I asked for the resources, manpower or money. So money is, I suppose, the first issue we need to get over. So I'm going to continue to work with the area engineer on trying to find some funding for it and come to a solution with residents there.
Okay, are you looking for defibrillators to be funded in some of the housing estates around Naas, Evie?
Yeah, so again, all of our defibrillators in Naas are in the town, and there's a new one just opened at Burke Pharmacy. And I met the Naas community first responders at the opening of that defibrillator, and they made a great point. A lot of the housing estates in Naas are far out of the town now. So you have someone trying to get into the town to get a defibrillator when it's really critically needed, before maybe the first responders or the ambulance service are getting to them. So it's happening in Wicklow at the moment, where housing estates, they're starting on the outskirts. So the housing estates that are furthest out from the town are having defibrillators funded by residents' associations, by the council in some cases. So I've asked the council that the first responders would come into the Naas MD hopefully next month and discuss maybe how we'd fund it, how other places are doing it, and what the benefit of them would be.
Okay, are the trees at Elmwood or Chestnut Hill in Naas on the schedule of tree works for this year?
Yes, so I was asking this. They're hanging over into people's gardens, and they're becoming a bit of a safety hazard at the moment, really. So they are being assessed to see what's possible, whether it's just cutting off branches or whether they need to be removed. And we will, all of the councillors, will get a schedule of works for this year and a costing versus the budget. So we put local property tax towards tree maintenance and pruning and removal if needs be. So we'll be balancing out the budget that we have with LCT and the cost of works. So hoping those trees will get on it, even if it's a case of just remedying the branches that are there at the moment, causing an issue.
Okay, and finally then, Evie, is there some good news with regards to Monreed Playground?
Yeah, look, finally, I know people are waiting on the full master plan for the park, and it is one of several amenity areas that are being worked on in Naas. So you've Monreed, you have Old Town Gardens, or De Burgh Estate as it's known, you also have Salins Amenity Lands and Curtis Town Park. They're all being done by the same team, so there is a lot of work on their plate at the moment. We don't have the master plan, the overall master plan for the park yet, but what we do have is a tender issued for new equipment for the playground. And that new equipment is a new slide, a sand pit with a digger, and a small swing basket. So the tender is due to close at the end of March, and the council are hoping to have the new equipment installed over the summer. So hoping that'll be in over the summer, and then look, we're eventually going to have to look at the overall upgrade, and the upgrade includes an upgrade of the playground.
Okay, good stuff. Fine Gael councillor on the Naas Municipal District, and indeed Mayor of Naas, councillor Evie Salmon. Thanks for joining us, Evie. After the break, we'll look back at the weekend's sporting action.
Sports Review Monday on Kildare Today.
Yes, time to look back at the weekend sporting action with KFM sports commentator Ger McNally, who's on the line with us. Good morning, Ger.
Good morning, Owen.
Let's start off, of course, only in one place, St Connolly's Park. Yesterday, it seemed to be the place to be. Quite an emotional day, and to add into the mix, Kildare getting the win over Meath.
Yeah, I suppose two separate facets to yesterday's yesterday afternoon. Obviously, the game itself was the most important part, and Kildare delivered a mixed performance, but certainly at stages it was one of their best performances of the league so far. They played some of their best football at different stages. Derek Kerwin in particular was a real handful for Meath to handle in the first half, and he was given a good supply of ball as well. And he ended the first half with 4 points, as Kildare led by 8 points to 3, and Kildare then scored the first three in the second half as well. And at that stage, leading 11 points to 3, he felt there was an opportunity for Kildare to really kick on and get a big win to kind of banish their their blues of the league so far this season. But unfortunately, the performance tailed off a little bit in the last 20 minutes. And when Meath got back to within 4 points going into injury time, there was even the unlikely possibility that Meath maybe could force a comeback and turn the game around. But thankfully, that didn't come to pass. Derek Kerwin sealed the win in injury time with a free that made it a 5 point victory for Kildare. And a good win in the end that secured fifth place in the league table. But yeah, around that, it was a memorable day in St. Colin's Park. I have to say huge credit to those involved who did a lot of work in arranging some of the pageantry of the day. The Newbridge Gospel Choir before and during halftime really added something to the occasion. They were absolutely fantastic. Those kids with club flags of every club in the county who paraded around halftime as well to, again, kind of just give a send-off to St. Colin's Park. And it was nice to discuss some of the memories as well with some of the characters that sit in the main stand as well. So all around a good day in St. Colin's Park.
Yeah, if we, we'll come back to that in a moment, Ger. We're just looking at the Allianz Football League Division 2 table. So Derry finished top of the table and Dublin second, so they both get promoted up to Division 1. Louth, who really were the surprise packet, I get a lot of people would say, in Division 2 under Mickey Hart, finishing in third. Cork fourth, Kildare fifth, Meath sixth, and Clare and Limerick relegated down to Division 3. And just to let people know as well who came up from Division 3, Cavan and Fermanagh, so they'll be playing with Kildare next year. And then it was Armagh and Donegal that got relegated from Division 1 down to Division 2. Overall, Ger, it's been a mixed league, more disappointing, I suppose, than anything else, but some good performances in the last 2 weeks against Limerick and Meath, which have salvaged something of a mid-placed finish for Kildare in the table.
Yeah, absolutely. And when you look at the league table, the final league table there, it's so finely balanced and kind of tight that, you know, if you look back over a couple of games, had they gone either way for Kildare, they could have been in relegation trouble or they could have been right up in the top three there. Like if Kildare had lost that game away to Clare, that could have been a real disaster for Kildare. That was really one of the key wins for Kildare, grinding out that 1 point win, having trailed by 6 points and down to 14 men. And just looking at the table, had Kildare beaten Louth and RD, Kildare could possibly have finished third, although they were well beaten on that day by Louth as well. So it's all ifs and buts, but as you say there, yeah, Kildare did rally in the last 2 weeks. There was a real possibility at one stage of relegation to Division 3, but in fairness to the team and management, they came together and won those last two rounds, albeit I have to say Limerick and Meath were on the day, they played Kildare pretty poor opponents on the day, and maybe they'll expect better come the championship, but Kildare could only beat those in front of them. They did the job in those two last rounds, and hopefully, fingers crossed, that'll be enough to secure a place for Kildare in the Sam World Cup.
Just before we look at some of the other sporting action over the weekend, Ger, a word on, first of all, Roscommon in Division 1. Davy Burke has done great work with Roscommon, and also our near neighbours Wicklow getting promoted from Division 4 up to Division 3.
Yeah, Roscommon, a really solid season from them. They started like a house on fire, winning their first three games and then lost the next three, and were kind of on the fringes of a relegation battle, although I think the score difference always meant that it was very unlikely that even a loss yesterday would have dragged them into that relegation battle, and indeed even 6 points ultimately would have been enough to keep them up. But they finished off the league with a win, and yeah, Davy Burke certainly has Roscommon going very nicely indeed, and they will look forward to what's a very kind of lopsided draw in the Connacht Championship by Roscommon, Mayo, Galway, the top three teams in Division 1, all on the same side of that draw in the Connacht Championship. So it'll be difficult for Davy and Roscommon, but yeah, they certainly seem to be going well. And yeah, full credit to Wicklow as well in Division 4, because that was a game that, or a promotion place that went right down to the wire in that division. It could have been Laois coming up, it could have been Wicklow, but eventually it was Wicklow, and Oisín McConville has done really well there in a short space of time for Wicklow. And a quick word as well for Niall Carew, of course, as well, who was managing Carlo, a Kildare man, who was a number of Kildare people involved in the back room, including, of course, our colleague Peter McConnell, who will be taking over the job as Carlo GAA head of operations in the summer as well. And they finished relatively okay. They've been nip and tuck with a lot of games throughout the season, lost some games by fine margins, and they actually play Wicklow in the Leinster Championship in just less than a couple of weeks now. Yes, a very quick turnaround into the Championship, and of course the winners of that game then will play Kildare a couple of weeks after that as well.
And in that Leinster Championship, that's where we'll find out where Kildare will play in the All-Ireland Series. Will they be in the Sam Maguire, or will they be in the Tailteann Cup? That wasn't decided yesterday, was it?
No, absolutely not. So yeah, all the provincial finalists will be guaranteed a place in the Sam Maguire Cup. So Kildare's task made very difficult by the fact that should they come past the winners of that Carlow and Wicklow tie, that they would probably face Dublin in the left semi-final. So that is why I suppose people are looking at the league for Kildare's possibilities, a possible path into the Sam Maguire more so maybe than other counties. And again, it is a strange sort of a setup when you look at the Connacht Championship, and as I mentioned, that's so lopsided with one side of the draw that it means that a team from Division 3 or 4 could potentially will potentially reach the Sam Maguire Cup with just one win against the Division 3 or 4 side, while Kildare would have to get past the behemoth that is Dublin to reach a Leinster final and get into the Sam Maguire Cup that way. So yeah, it's I have to say it wouldn't be my choice for their championship structures at all.
Okay, if we look at some of the other Kildare teams then, Gerard, that were in action over the weekend, the Camogie side lost on Saturday to Carlow up in Abbottstown in the Division 3A League semi-final, but the women's footballers had a good win yesterday afternoon yet again.
Yeah, first of all, that Carlow game against Carlow in the Camogie game on Saturday in Abbottstown, and yeah, Carlow were just kind of too physically strong for Joe Quaid's team. Carlow were relegated from Division 2 last year when they were without a number of the regular players, but they seem back close to full strength this year and look capable of going back to Division 2. So just on the day, yeah, they were just out-muscled Kildare through that, although it was still a little bit in the balance. It was 5-3 after about 20 minutes. Carlow pushed out the lead by 9-3, and then early in the second half there was no score for the opening 12 minutes of the second half, and Kildare actually had a lot of possession at that stage, and maybe if they had could have snuck a goal during that time, it could have put a different slant on the game. But ultimately Carlow went on and got two goals and won quite comfortably. But then the ladies footballers yesterday in Hogfield, yes, what a win that was. And that was a real tough battle against the Wexford side, who came in great form as well themselves, and also had hopes of reaching a league final, but it was very close all the way through. And I suppose there was one moment of brilliance really that settled the game. And people maybe have seen the video of Nessa Dooley's goal on social media overnight and stuff into this morning as well. But a wonderful goal. She actually missed a penalty, hit the crossbar, but watched it all the way down, landing from a great height and caught it cleanly on a first-time volley into the back of the net. And I tell you, if we see an Ireland player score a volley like that against France tonight in the Aviva, we'll be very, very happy as well. And it was a wonderful way to save that victory and finish off an excellent league stage of the season for Deanna Harrell's team. And they're going to go into a league final as well. So lots to look forward to for that team.
Indeed. All right. Thanks for that, Ger. And just to let people know as well, in the Electric Ireland Leinster Minor Hurling Championship Round 2 tonight, Kildare play Carlow in Netwatch Cullen Park. It throws in at 7:30. The team has been named for that. It is as follows. In goals, Fionn Kelly of Naas, the full-back line, Paddy Connolly, Clane, Sean Walsh, Kilcock and James Bedford, Naas. Half-back line, Ben Mulligan, Kilcock, Keane Brody, Maynooth, Dylan Doherty, Leixlip. Middle of the field, Tim Ryan, Ardclock, Oran Byrne, Maynooth. Half-forward line, Dara McGlynn, Kilcock, Charlie Carroll, Naas, Olin Hines, Kelly, Leixlip. And the full-forward line, Michael Owens, Selbridge, Alex Bell, Moorfield and Tom Power, Naas. Again, that one throws in at 7:30 tonight in Carlow.